Open your Bible with me to Genesis chapter 39. Most of us, I think, are familiar with the stories of Joseph in the book of Genesis. Sometimes I think we need to kind of go back and remember his age as he is, this passage is unfolding the accounts of his life. Joseph was 17 years old when he was shepherding the flocks in the land of Canaan. And he was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, according to Genesis chapter 41 and verse 46. It's my estimation that the events that we're going to be reading about here in Genesis chapter 39 took place when Joseph was about 27 or 28 years old. Because chapter 41 in verse 1 of Genesis says that he had been in prison for 2 full years before he interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh. So there's the calculation. He's 27, 28 years old when these events in chapter 39 take place. That means that Joseph had been in the land of Egypt for approximately 10 years when these events in Genesis chapter 39 occur. And during that 10 years, Joseph had proven himself an individual that was trustworthy. And that trust was directly related to his relationship with God. We're going to see that tonight. So begin reading with me in Genesis chapter 39, there in verse 1. Let's read through the first part of verse 6. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph. So he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he felt everything. He left everything that he owned in Joseph's charge, and with him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now that tells me that Joseph is regarded as an individual that is worthy of trust. Potiphar recognizes this. Now, we know that up to this point that Joseph has been a young man that has been abandoned by his brothers. And it must have felt like to Joseph that his parents maybe had abandoned him as well. He might have been there in Egypt thinking, well, why doesn't my dad come and get me? Why doesn't he bring all the brothers down here and rescue me? Why doesn't he bring his soldiers and those that he could muster to pay to come and bring me out of this Egyptian bondage? But it just doesn't happen. He doesn't realize, perhaps, that his father thinks that he's dead. So here's Joseph in this foreign culture. Things are unfamiliar to him, especially here at these early stages in the beginning. Probably he had to learn the language of the Egyptians, and he had to learn something about their way of life. And so in this period of approximately 10 years, he has had a lot of adjustments to make. Now, for some of us, that might just throw us under the bus, and we wouldn't be able to make the adjustments. Or if we did find ourselves thrown into a different culture, our whole character and disposition might be reflected in rebellious kinds of behavior and frustrations and anger and hostility. But you don't see that in Joseph. I'm going to suggest to you that Joseph had been trained well before he went down to Egypt. And I think that it is reflective in his character as it unfolds here in chapter 39 in particular. I think that as I read this text, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. I think that the reason for that is that Joseph is with the Lord. What do you think? So to be sold by your brothers, be forced to make all these kinds of adjustments, might have thrown Joseph in an emotional and psychological tailspin, but he seems to be able to respond to the situation in a positive way and to negotiate with the circumstances, and he negotiated with the circumstances in a good way. Notice again that this text says the Lord was with him, verse 2. And then in verse 3 it says the Lord was with him. And Potiphar even recognizes that the Lord is with him. Now somebody says, well, how did Potiphar recognize that? Well, I think it's reflected in Joseph's character that this man can see. And I'd like to suggest to you that the Lord will be with you if you're willing to be with him. The Lord was with David. Later on in the history of the nation of Israel, the Lord was with David because David submitted himself to the Lord's will. And Joseph is doing that same kind of thing. Now, it's interesting, the reason why I would bring up David, because he stands in direct contrast to Saul, who is older than David and happens to be king of the nation of Israel at that time. And the text indicates that God rejects Saul because Saul rejects his submission that he should. He doesn't give allegiance to the Lord like he should. And so Saul, the Spirit of the Lord, is exchanged for an evil spirit. And David is the one that then is portrayed as this man after God's own heart, because David willingly gives himself in service to the Lord. And that's what Joseph is doing. He's willingly giving himself into service to the Lord, and so the Lord is with him and blesses him in this kind of a circumstance. Now, Joseph, it would seem to me, even at the young age of 17, is familiar with his spiritual heritage. He is knowledgeable about the promise that God has made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. As a matter of fact, later on in his life, as his life is actually coming to an end, he reminds the descendants of Jacob and his own descendants that God has made promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he says, when I die, you take my bones back to the land of Canaan, because God is promising us these great things. And so he is familiar with the spiritual heritage. And we might say, well, where did he learn all this? By age 17? I would like to suggest to you that he's learning that in all probability from his father Jacob. Jacob is familiar with his spiritual heritage as well, and by the age of 17 he has really trained Joseph well, and it's going to serve him well as he gives his allegiance to God here in the land of Egypt. But, you know, Joseph could have interpreted the betrayal by his brothers and his slavery as an indication that God was not blessing his life. But you notice, that's not the way he interpreted it. He saw God's plan as being executed through his life. And here's the problem that we sometimes face ourselves, and that is that we don't see God's great story as reflected in our own lives. And we don't see God's story as reflected in the activities of the people around us. But when we see ourselves in this spiritual heritage like Joseph saw himself, then it's going to give purpose to our life, it's going to give meaning to our life, and it's going to carry us through all kinds of difficult circumstances, just like it did Joseph. It's going to give us a sense of direction, and it's going to help us to make the decisions that we need to make in life and make those decisions in a way that glorifies and honors the Lord. But in this text that we've just read, these first six verses, Joseph's trustworthiness has affected his relationship with his master. Again, Joseph is trustworthy because of his relationship with the Lord. And so he becomes successful in the master's household. I don't see his success occurring overnight. And I don't see his master's trust in him occurring overnight. It seems as I read this text, it says that he was found in the house of his master as opposed to being a field slave. Well, think about that for a moment. That means that he's in the house, therefore there is opportunity for the master to observe his behavior, and the fact that he's in the house in the first place may be an indication that the master is willing to place some level of confidence and trust in him. And then the text says he found favor in his master's sight. The way that I look at that is that the master has him there in the house and he's observing this behavior. And so he is favorably perceived in the eyes of his master. And then it indicates that Joseph becomes his personal servant. So there seems to me to be a progression here in the level of trust that Joseph is earning from his master. And then the text says that the master makes him overseer over his house and puts him over everything in his charge. So, Joseph's trust has been increasing. And his trustworthiness has become more and more evident. You know, this is the way that trust works. You don't just start out with it. People observe your behavior and they learn to trust you. In other words, they develop faith in you because they see the kind of character that you are. They see the kind of individual that you are. They see some level of devotion to the Lord. And it causes them to place trust and confidence in you. And another thing in regard to that, your trustworthiness is going to affect your relationship with other people. It's amazing to me how people will help you when you are trustworthy. Now, most of us, as we start out in our youth, are not very powerful. We don't have very much money. We don't have very much education. But my observation, after 66 years almost, is that as you do the things that people are willing to place their trust in you, you demonstrate the kind of behavior that is commendable, then they will help you. They will help you. They will help you with such things as your education. They will help you out financially. When you find yourself in a difficult situation, you'll feel comfortable calling on them, or they will come to you and help you even without you asking, because they have confidence in you and they're willing to invest in your life. Now let me think with you about your relationship with your parents for a moment here. Yes, I am 66 years old, but nevertheless, I still am able to think back to my childhood. And I remember a few things about that. And I learned over that period of time that if I could help my parents develop trust in me, that meant that I got more privileges. Anybody else notice that? And so I kind of tried to make it my business, even though it was maybe not as enthusiastic as it ought to be, I began to try to make them trust me. And when my dad would say, "Well, no, you can't do that," my response would be, "Well, you just don't trust me." And that was right. The reason why he wouldn't let me go to the Louisville, to the FFA convention, is because he didn't trust me there. Maybe he didn't only not trust me, maybe he didn't trust the other people that were there. But it was a lack of trust. I think that he would have allowed me to go on if he could have trusted all the people that were there and if he could have been reassured that I wasn't going to do anything out of line. Then he would allow me to go. But he didn't. Why? Because there's a lack of trust and confidence. But as children and young people, what we can do is we can work to build trust. And that's what Joseph is doing, isn't it? He's building trust in his master by doing the right kinds of things. And guess what the master's doing? He's helping Joseph out. He's moving him up the ladder. Notice that. The powerful man is moving young Joseph up the ladder because Joseph is acting in a trustworthy way. The man has confidence in him. We can build trust in one another. We can build trust in one another. And this trust may not come as quickly as we might like, but that's the way trust is. It's built over a period of time, and it's gained by proven behavior. And so what we need to learn is that we need to be patient and make the investments and keep up with it, and you'll be glad that you did. Now, there's another thing that I notice here, and that is that others, in addition to your parents, see your behavior, and they see your trustworthiness, and they learn about your trustworthiness, and then they actually create opportunities for you and advantages for you. So, like this man here, Potiphar is creating situations for Joseph because he sees his trustworthiness. So, the first point that I want to make tonight is develop the kind of character, the kind of behavior that creates trust. Act in a faithful way. The way to do that is you be with the Lord like the Lord is with you. Now look with me in Genesis chapter 39 again at the second part of verse 6. And let's read down through verse 12 this time. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." Now that's a New American Standard Bible's way of saying, "Come and have sex with me." He refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife." Now, let me ask you something. How old is Joseph? 27, 28. What does that tell you? He's healthy. He's attractive. And she's attracted to him. And she's appealing to him. Now, notice that he's not appealing to her, but she's appealing to him. He says, "How could I do this because you are his wife? How could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Now notice that. He regards this as sin. Well, where did he learn that? It's possible that his father Jacob had taught him that. Where did Jacob learn that kind of thing? Maybe it comes as a result of the moral principles that these patriarchs were taught from God. So Joseph is responding to this situation. In verse 10 it says, "As she spoke to Joseph day after day." Now, you know, he might be able to resist the temptation once, maybe even twice. But this indicates that this temptation is a regular kind of thing. But the text says he did not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. And it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household were there inside. She caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. And when she saw that he left his garment in her hand and fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought in a Hebrew," that is, Potiphar, my husband, "has brought in this Hebrew to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed." In other words, what she's doing is she is accusing him of raping her. "When he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. And so she left his garment beside her until her master came home. And then she spoke to him with these words, 'The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me, and as I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled outside.'" point that I want you to see in this is that Joseph's life continues to be governed by his relationship with God. All of our relationships are to be governed over by the Lord God. You know, in the book of Ephesians in chapter 5, Paul addresses what in the ancient world could be considered house rules or house laws. And he talks about the different relationships in the house, this marriage relationship. Then he talks about the family relationship, the parent-child kind of relationship. And then later on he talks about work relationships. And he even talks about our relationship with the spiritual forces of darkness. All of these relationships are influenced by our relationship with God and governed by our relationship with God. So here is Joseph. Where did he get this teaching? Probably from his father, Jacob, who is hopefully working to discipline his sons in the way of the Lord on the basis of the revelation that God has given to him, beginning with Abraham, continuing through Isaac, and now to Jacob, and now to Joseph. Well, Joseph's relationship to Potiphar and his wife has been governed by God already, hadn't it? So his relationship with Potiphar has been governed by God, and now what we're learning is that his relationship with Potiphar's wife is governed by his relationship with God. This woman invites Joseph into a sexual relationship with him. Now, let's think about that for a moment. Number one, who could Joseph tell about what was happening? Can't tell Potiphar, can he? What if he tries to tell some of the other servants? Doesn't have any family to talk to about this instance. So it's pretty much Joseph and his relationship with God, isn't it? He can talk to God about it. Joseph certainly knows what the situation is. He's no fool. What we need to realize is that sometimes it's just you and the Lord to deal with a really difficult situation. This woman's gate is open, and Joseph's was not. What you're going to have to do is to make sure that your gate is not open to sin. This woman invited Joseph day after day. Look with me in the book of Proverbs in chapter 7. Much of the teaching of the book of Proverbs has to do with a father's instruction to his sons. I hope that even as we read this as a father's instruction to his sons, that it could go just as well, and the application is just as true for a father's instruction to his daughters, a mother's instructions to her sons. So don't get all hung up on the way that this is expressed here, because the application is both for males and for females, all right? You with me? But listen to what he says. Proverbs chapter 7. Verse 6 beginning. At the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice, and I saw among the naive, and discerned among the youths, a young man lacking sense, passing through the street near her corner, and he takes the way to her house. In the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, in the darkness. And behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. Now, like I said, this is instruction to sons. But sometimes it's not the female harlot that is dressed that way. It's the male that is dressed that way and coming to meet the female. Or it may be a same-sex kind of thing that is the temptation. The text says, she is coming to meet him dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. She is boisterous and rebellious, and her feet do not remain at home. She's now in the streets, now in the squares, and lurks by every corner. So she seizes him and kisses him, and with a brazen face she says to him, I was due to offer peace offerings, and today I've paid my vows. Therefore I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly, and I have found you. I've spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt, and I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come and let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses. For my husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey, and he's taken a bag of money with him, and at the full moon he will come home. And with her many persuasions she entices him. With her flattering lips she seduces him. Suddenly he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver and a bird hastens to the snare so he does not know that it will cost him his life. Well, that's strong language, isn't it? Forthright language. Then the text says, now therefore, my sons, listen to me and pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many are the victims she has cast down, and numerous are all her slain. Her house is the way to Sheol, or death, descending to the chambers of death. Well, that's forthright. Words to the wise. Joseph's relationship to Potiphar and to his wife is governed by his relationship to God. And this father's instruction coming from God is revealing to these sons that their relationship to God is first and primary, and it disciplines all the other relationships. And so this woman appeals to Joseph day after day. One of the things that I learned from that, and that is that we need to learn to be careful not to make ourselves vulnerable and to place ourselves in situations where there are temptations where our will may lose control to the emotion. As I read this text, I find Joseph finding himself in a vulnerable situation. As the text unfolds, it says, everybody else is out of the house. Interesting observation, isn't it? Interesting observation. Just Potiphar's wife and Joseph. I'm going to suggest to you that the situation wouldn't have been nearly as powerful for Joseph as it had been some other people in the house. But Joseph found himself in this vulnerable situation. Joseph probably could have been a little more careful in this situation. And sometimes we're just way too naive. And we allow the temptation to overpower us. And the fact of the matter is, sometimes you just want to do the wrong thing. And you may actually create the situation where you are vulnerable to doing the wrong thing because that's what you want to do. In verse 13, it says that Joseph dropped his garment and ran. Sometimes you just have to run. I mean that literally. Sometimes you just have to run from the situation. And Joseph was smart enough in this instance and has enough sense about him in this vulnerable situation to run in this, run from this situation. Now, this is, I don't know any other way to say this, but this ain't easy. Because the society in which you live is pressuring you to not discipline yourself by the instruction that God is giving. And the society in which you live says a variety of different things to kind of confuse that situation. Well, if you love this individual, it'll be okay. If there is the potential for a future, let's say marriage, then it'll be okay. And sometimes we believe lies because that's what we would like to do and like to believe. And we're enticed. Sometimes you just have to run to get away from that situation. Now, in this particular context, obviously, Joseph is innocent, and yet this woman accuses him of rape. And here's the point that I'd like to see from, like you to see from that perspective, and that is that although you are innocent, you may be treated wrongly. You may be treated harshly. And you might say, well, that's not fair, and that person lied. This woman did. And so Joseph, if he had said this woman lied, he would have been right, wouldn't he? But you see, in this text, Joseph was treated unfairly, and I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that you will be too. And people will take advantage of the situation, and they will lie to you, and they will deceive you, and they will use their power to abuse you. And so this woman lies about Joseph. She first of all lied to the men of her household. Now what she's doing is she is creating a following, you see. She's lying to these men in the household. And of course, why, surely they would believe the master's wife. And then when her husband comes on the scene, she lies to him too. And of course he is emotionally disposed to believe what she says, and after all, she's got all the men in the household now convinced, and so they would back up her story, right? But maybe these men in her household are more intelligent or more willing to understand what the circumstances are. Maybe even her husband knew her. Maybe he even trusted Joseph more than we think. You know what? He didn't have Joseph executed. Wonder why that is. He didn't have Joseph executed. Instead, he put him in prison. That may be suggestive, the fact that maybe he knows this woman of his. But he can't be known as an individual that would allow his wife to betray him, can he? And get away with that? So whatever the dynamics are, Joseph is placed in prison. Young ladies and young men, older ladies and older men, if you want to make a spouse angry, betray them. There's nothing like betrayal that will make them more angry at you. If you do not want to put your life in danger, then what you need to do is you need to keep your gate closed. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 22 refers to an ox going to the slaughter. Verse 23 speaks of a bird hastening to a snare. And verse 27 says, her house is the way of Sheol, descending to the chambers of death. Well, Joseph might not have died, but maybe his life was preserved because the Lord was with him. He went to jail, even though he was innocent. But it's interesting that the text specifically says in verse 21 there that the Lord was with Joseph. Even while he's in jail, the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. You know, my question is this. Well, if the Lord is with him, why is he in jail in the first place? Why didn't the Lord step up and get him out of prison? Why did the Lord allow this to happen to Joseph in the first place? Sometimes we don't have all the answers to the questions that we might ask. And that's the way it is in your life too. You may have questions about, well, if the Lord is on my side, why is this bad thing happening to me? There may not be any clear reason to you why the Lord is allowing that to happen. But the text says that the Lord was with Joseph. I'm going to suggest this to you, that Joseph perceived of the Lord being with him too, even in jail. And as this account unfolds, Joseph's trustworthiness led to the jailer putting Joseph in charge. Isn't that interesting? Even in jail, he's a trustworthy individual and he reveals his character. Leadership finds its foundation in men and women who are trustworthy. You know, when I think about the appointment of leaders in a congregation like this, elders and deacons and Bible class teachers and all that, who do you want in those kinds of positions to lead except those that you can place your trust in? That you know that they have your best interest at heart, that have demonstrated the kind of character that demonstrates faithfulness. And this trustworthiness begins with a life that is governed by God. And so in this instance, Joseph advances even though he's in jail, and the chief jailer advances him. Now here's a really powerful lesson that I learned from Joseph here. And that is, even when you are treated unfairly, you do the right thing. That's going to take patience. And even though you're treated unfairly, you never abandon the Lord, because He has not forgotten you. What you need to do is be strong and courageous, and you need to give the Lord time to make you prosper. Now, there's a lot more to learn from Joseph. We're going to talk about it. We've got some lessons planned for the future, and this is just beginning. But I want you to recognize that the Lord will be with you if you are with Him. Parents, instruct your children with survival skills. Teach them about their spiritual heritage and who they are. Help them to understand their place in the developing and unfolding story of the Bible, and help them to understand God's operation in their life. Young people, you give yourself to the Lord and you make a determination that the Lord will be with me because I will be with the Lord. Be trustworthy. Let your character be governed by your relationship with God. And recognize that you're not always going to be treated fairly. You're going to be called on to face circumstances that are out of your control, except for your relationship with God, and face those circumstances with courage and determination, and recognize your place in God's plan, and let the Lord make you prosper. God's going to use Joseph in magnificent ways. God is going to use Joseph to influence your life, if you will allow him to. Not only in these accounts, but in Joseph's preservation of his whole nation of people. All the 12 tribes, Joseph is the one that provides for their life and their existence and their prosperity. Understand that God will use Joseph. He will be with Joseph because Joseph is with the Lord. Opportunity is yours tonight. If you're willing to make that kind of commitment, the same kind of commitment that Joseph made, to be used by the Lord, to give your life to Him, and He will be with you. If you need to make changes in your life tonight, won't you come forward as together we stand and as we sing.